Thank you all for coming. I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 18, Perfection of Renunciation, text number 72. Kachit etat shutam varta dvaya kagrena chetasa kachit agina samoha pranatas te dananjaya. O son of Pritha, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusion now dispelled? Shupra's purport. The Lord was acting as the spiritual master of Arjuna. Therefore, it was his duty to inquire from Arjuna whether he understood the whole Bhagavad Gita in its proper perspective. If not, the Lord was ready to re-explain any point, the whole Bhagavad Gita, if so required. Actually, anyone who hears Bhagavad Gita from a bona fide spiritual master like Krishna or his representative will find that all his ignorance is dispelled. Bhagavad Gita is not an ordinary book written by a poet or fiction writer. It is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any person fortunate enough to hear these teachings from Krishna or from his bona fide spiritual representative is sure to become a liberated person and get out of the darkness of ignorance. So the text again. Kachit etat shutam varta tvaya kagrena chetasa kachit agana samoha pranatasta te dananjaya. O son of Pritha, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? Om Vishnu Upadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyatya De Sitarane. Arjuna was on a battlefield and the war was just about to begin. And Krishna took the time for 2 hours to try to solve Arjuna's dilemma because he didn't want to fight. And therefore Krishna was, after 2 hours of speaking to Arjuna and answering Arjuna's questions, Krishna finally asked the question, what are you going to do? Are you going to run or are you going to fight? Actually, Krishna only asked Krishna one question. Have you been bothering to listen to what I've been saying? Or did you fall asleep during the conversation? As I mentioned, Shruti Kirti Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's secretary for some time, he had to spend a lot of time, even at night, massaging Srila Prabhupada. So, in the morning he would be very tired because he would be up late at night. But he was expected every day. When Prabhupada gave the lecture, he'd sit right in front of Prabhupada as his personal servant, and he had to be awake. So that was very difficult. So he learned the technique of keeping his eyes open while he was asleep. So that's a very valuable technique to learn when you're a devotee. So Krishna was wondering, Arjuna, you've been listening for 2 hours. Yes, a few questions, but have you actually heard anything I said? So naturally Arjuna said, he'll tell us in the next verse whether he's listening or not. But that was very important to Krishna, whether after speaking someone was bothering to listening. And not only listening, but Krishna was wondering if you're actually going to follow what I had to say. If you actually listened, what are you going to do? Therefore, we understand, as Krishna said throughout the Bhagavad Gita, that the purpose of listening is to be able to do something. Just like this is Christmas, it's also the Prabhupada Marathon, just so happens. So Christmas, there's probably some advertisements going on. And certainly in the shop windows, there are some probably nice decorations, encouraging people to buy things. Because the advertisement is usually, please come and buy. Come and buy. Do something according to what we're asking you to do. So the whole material world is based upon giving people information about what will make them happy and then advising them to do something. Therefore, as Krishna said in the 34th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, the proper combination for spiritual understanding is submissions, inquiry, and service. So everyone is inquisitive, everyone is asking questions. Even the birds are asking questions, as I taught bird language last year, if you remember. Maybe I'm learning a little Slovene, but even the birds here seem to speak the same language, even the Slovenians. So if you learn bird language, it's universal. First thing is beep, beep. Do you know what that means? What's that? Where's the worm specifically? Beep means worm. And beep means where. Very simple language. There's not much grammar to it all. And beep, beep, beep.
That's a female bird.
No, that's beep, 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 beep. No, beep, beep, beep means it's just over on that tree over there. So everyone is asking questions and everyone is getting answers. So Krishna, Arjuna asked questions. What is my duty? What should I do? And Krishna gave him the answers. So the whole Bhagavad Gita, the whole Vedic literature is meant to give us the answer, to tell us what to do. And here Krishna summarizes very simply, the whole Vedic scripture is just so we pay attention to Krishna. That's all. That's all that's necessary. So we pay attention to Krishna or Krishna's representative, then our life will become perfect. Because paying attention means to actually fulfill what Krishna is asking us to do. For instance, in the Vedic, in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Abhayam sapta samshudira jnana yoga vivastiti danam dhamasya jagnascha swadhyaya tapa arjavam. So he tells us, according to the Varna and Ashram in the 16th chapter, what we're supposed to do. In other words, if we want to become Krishna conscious, if we want to revive our relationship with Krishna, which Krishna says is the goal, then we have to do things. And specifically, each one of us have a different situation. And so Krishna gives us different phases, different things that we should do according to the level that we're at. So the first level is brahmachari, swadhyaya, the learning phase. And the first thing we're supposed to learn, according to Narada Muni in the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is brahmachari guru kule dasan vantad guru ahitam. The first thing is to live in the live with a devotee or associate with the devotee, brahmachari, and control the mind and the senses, danta. So controlling the mind and senses means to utilize them in Krishna's service, specifically the beginning by hearing. So we can only control our senses when we try to hear about Krishna. And when we hear about anything else, then our senses and mind may become attracted to some what we're hearing. And that will take away our intelligence, according to Bhagavad Gita. Because the whole world is full of glories. Although according to the Krishna book, the whole world is full of, everyone is singing about Krishna, but everyone's understanding it in a different way. That the whole world is dancing with Krishna, but those who dance with Krishna personally, they're dancing the rasa dance. And those who are dancing, trying to imitate Krishna, they're dancing with his illusory energy. So the first thing is Krishna is telling about is how to utilize our mind and senses in his service. That's called danta. That's what the brahmacharis learn. And how to use it in Krishna's service? It's very simple. Either we hear books like the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells us what to do with our body and our mind and our intelligence, or we'll be controlled by some other agency, namely Maya. Trivida narakasyadam dwaram nashitam atmanaha kama krodha tatalo vas tasmat etam trayam chaget. That there are three gates leading to hell, namely lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should become free from these gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. So the reason why we're presently not Krishna conscious, fully at least, is because in the past we utilize our senses in the service of lust, anger, and greed. Of course, nowadays it's love and entrepreneurship. And taking care of those rascals, defending the country, nationalism, lust, anger, and greed. He is my enemy and I've killed him, and all my other enemies will all be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am perfect, powerful, and I am happy. So this is called modern society. Romance, entrepreneurship, and defending the country. But Krishna says that anyone who comes under the control of these three things, they can have neither peace, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. So what's the alternative? Tasmat shastram pramanam te karya karya vyastito gyatva shastram vidanokta karma kartam viharasi. One should know what is duty and what is not duty by the directions of shastra, and knowing such duties, one should act so that one can gradually become purified. So these books are so important. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to distribute them and read them. Not only distribute them, he also wanted us to read them. Prabhupada used to say, we go out in the street and we say, here, take this book. They say, okay, but what's in it? And you go, I don't know. They never told me to read them, they just told me to distribute them. So we should also know what's in the book, as well as distribute them. So this is Prabhupada's marathon. It used to be called the Christmas marathon, but no one celebrates Christmas anymore. Hardly. At least not where in America they weren't celebrating Christmas. But we celebrate Prabhupada's marathon. And we distribute it by giving people the most valuable gift, the most valuable present, transcendental knowledge, which is the only thing that will actually save them from a very unhappy future. We are actually everyone's best friend and well-wisher because we're giving people transcendental knowledge, and that transcendental knowledge can give us Krishna's association. And in Krishna's association, we can experience a higher happiness that makes us not so much allured by the lesser forms of happiness, which is so much advertised, so much encouraged in modern society, which has led to a very unpleasant situation. All the problems in this world are caused by simply lack of Krishna consciousness. All the complications have come about because people have not followed Krishna's instructions. For instance, Krishna eternally lives in Goloka Vrindavan and herds cows. And the amazing thing is that although he has so many cows and he's had them eternally, he's never eaten even one of them. He's a vegetarian. He's a Krishnarian, actually. Nanda Maharaj offers all the food to Lord Narayan. So Krishna always, eternally, has been eating prasadam. And Krishna and his friends, they all get along with each other. Even when Krishna comes here, he does so simply for the benefit of everyone. Krishna doesn't envy anyone. He loves everyone. So if we follow Krishna, if we follow the culture, then our lives can actually be quite simple, because what we really need to survive, as Prabhupada once said, the first time I went to New Vrindavan in 1969, to the farm there, and Srila Prabhupada was there, and I talked to the head of the farm, Kirtananda Maharaj at that time, and he told me that Prabhupada is simply telling us that if we simply get a little land and a cow, then all our economic problems will be solved. In other words, if we have food, and we have shelter, and we have nice relationships with people, then our economic problems can be solved very easily. But modern civilization, they've made everything very complicated, because they're killing the cow and the bull, and replacing it with tractors and trucks and all kinds of things. They have to build so many factories, which need so much energy, and to defend it, they need so many armies, and et cetera, et cetera. So they made everything so complicated. It's just like that famous story of the man with the saintly person with the pair of underwear. He was so renounced because he was always thinking about Krishna, and all he had was a pair of underwear. But one day he was sitting by the Ganges, and one mouse came and stole his underwear. So he was very upset, very embarrassed. So he went and begged another piece of underwear, and he was warned that underwear is very expensive nowadays. Next time you come and try to beg it, you may not find another piece of underwear. So anyhow, he was very careful this time. So he decided that he went on the internet. He had his friend do research on the internet and found out the only thing that would protect his underwear was a cat. So he ordered a cat from Amazon. And the cat came. And while he bathed in the Ganges this time, the cat was guarding his underwear. But the cat started to make these strange sounds, which he didn't understand. Purr, purr, purr. So he got an interpreter. And the interpreter said he needs milk. So the saintly person said, "Where do I get milk from?" And he said, "From a cow." So he had to beg a cow. So he got a cow to give the cat milk, who was protecting his underwear. So everything was going fine, except he didn't know how to milk a cow. So he went on the internet and found a lady who knew how to milk a cow, and he married her. It was cheaper than hiring her, he thought. So then he had a wife, he had a cow and a cat to protect his underwear. But then his wife wanted some children, so then he had to get a house. But to pay for the house, he had to get a job. To go to the job, he had to get a car. So he had to work at night to pay for the car, to pay for the house, to pay for the kids, to pay for the wife, to milk the cow, to provide to the cat who protected his underwear. So now he realized that life was getting too complicated, and he wouldn't be able to afford his underwear anymore. So he took off his underwear and renounced everything and walked away. So that's modern society, making things more and more complicated in order to solve problems that could actually easily be solved in other ways. But because they don't listen to Krishna, because they're listening to other people who have no interest in realizing Krishna consciousness, in realizing our eternal identities, in realizing the eternal relationship we have with the Supreme, who's all attractive and all loving and our best friends. And whatever he says in Bhagavad Gita is simply for our benefit. Krishna actually doesn't make any profit from selling these books. Although his devotees have been selling it since time immemorial, no one has ever sent a check to Goloka Vrindavan. It's a non-profit organization as far as Krishna is concerned. He's not making any profit. He's doing it simply for the benefit of all living entities. He wants them to receive transcendental knowledge. So this transcendental knowledge is very valuable for us because it's the one thing that will protect us from Maya. That if we have this transcendental knowledge, then in different circumstances we can know what to do and what not to do. Unfortunately, people have not received transcendental knowledge. They receive some other knowledge which has all been false. Asatyam apratishtam te jagaro horanishvaram aparashparam sambhutam kemanyakama haiduke. They say that the world is unreal. But how can the world be unreal? Does anyone feel this world is unreal? That they're not really here? I mean, the lecture may not be first class, but you're somewhat here. Well, you're not at home. But the scientists say, so-called scientists, so-called philosophers, they say everything's unreal. But if everything was unreal, as I said this morning in the class, that if everything came about out of nothing, by accident, then how did they get their PhD degree? Did it come by accident? Were they sitting at home and by accident some degree appeared out of the void, out of nothing? Why do they work so hard to get it? A degree in knowledge, and then they go to the university and they tell everyone everything happens by accident. How did they get to the university? By accident. They were sitting in their home and by accident they got to the university. So they don't believe any of it. They don't believe that sitting at home they're going to get rich. They go out and do something with their intelligence. They make arrangements. So how is this universe, which is infinitely more organized in their own lives, how did that come about by accident? They say it's unreal with no foundation. Therefore, because they're trying to strike fear in everyone, there's no foundation, everything is unsteady, it's uncertain, nothing is working according to any cause. But why do they spend so much time, the scientists, trying to find out what the cause is if they don't believe there is a cause? And there's no God in control. Certainly they believe there's no God in control because they think they're going to be in control. They're God. They don't want any competition. The whole problem is that they don't believe in God's word. Therefore, they're trying to change things, but everything they change gets worse. Every adjustment they make to the perfection of God's creation simply makes it worse. They say that God has created the bull, the cow and the bull, they're useless animals. But what? Let them create some machine that you put grass in one end and the milk comes out the other end. What machine could they create can do that? Krishna has created the cow, though, it can do that. But they deny Krishna's creation instead of appreciating it and honoring the cow, giving it a Nobel Prize, they want to eat it. God has created a male machine and a female machine, and so many species of life. So let the scientists create a male Rolls Royce and a female Rolls Royce. Let them create these two Rolls Royces, let them get together and make little Rolls Royces. Then everyone can have a Rolls Royce, no problem. But they can't do that. They can't create anything. They talk about replacing men and women with machines. But can they create machines that will create other machines? Little machines, and you feed them, and then they grow up to become big machines? No, Krishna has done that. But because they're envious of him, they claim that they're God and making these useless machines. Not useless, they're valuable to us because we've become so complicated we can't live without them. We need a car to go to work so we can make some money so we can go to the store and buy the food. And then we hope the prices don't get too high because otherwise we can't afford the car, we can't afford the food, we can't afford the house, We can't afford our kids. We can't afford anything. So that's called progress. But previously, people would go outside, they'd throw some seeds on the ground, they grow up, they harvest them, they eat them, and everyone lived happily. And they spent their time at night going to watch plays about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, peaceful life, hearing about how God loved them, how everything was fine, everything was perfectly arranged by Krishna, and that our destination was going to become eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge, so that people can go sleep happily at night. So now people work like dogs, they eat like hogs, they have sex like a pigeon, and they try to defend themselves, at least mentally, like a tiger. And then they work so hard, and then at night they watch some horrible movie about people slaughtering each other so they can go to sleep and sleep peacefully. And they say, oh, you people are, you know, you're wasting your time. You're a cult. You're a danger to society. You look too peaceful. You know, as Prabhupada said, people are in a prison, they're breaking bricks. And some comes along and he's just singing and dancing. And they say, what are you doing? Why are you here in the prison breaking bricks like we are? Why are you so happy? What's wrong with you? So the point is, we should hear and chant about Krishna. We should try to hear this knowledge, find the process by which we can realize we're eternal, because we're eternal. We might as well realize, if you're eternal, then you might as well realize you're eternal, rather than working hard to avoid death when you're never going to die. If you're going to eternally try to avoid death when you're never going to die, what's the point? One is wasting one's time. But if we can spend time realizing that we're eternal and realizing our eternal relationship with the most loving, attractive, affectionate person, then that time is well spent. Everything else, struggling hard in the material world to avoid death, which always comes anyhow. And by the way, even if we become healthy, we take all our vitamins, we do our exercise, we follow all the requirements, even we die healthy, what is the advantage? When you see Yamaraj looks at your scorecard and says, well, you had a miserable life, but you died healthy, so you're right. No, at the end of life, we're healthy if we're spiritually healthy. And we're spiritually healthy if we actually read these books every day, Srinvadham, Swakata, Krishna, Punya, Shravana, Kirtana, with attention. And if we follow Krishna's instructions, then we'll become more and more attracted to the books, we'll become more and more attracted to the holy name, that we'll actually experience what's in the books, we'll experience what's the Krishna and his names, and then we'll pay more and more attention naturally, just like iron naturally attracts metal. But if the metal is, if the iron metal, the scraps of metal of iron are rusty, then of course they won't be attracted. But their nature is to be attracted to the iron. That's just normal. So we're normally attracted to Krishna. That's our nature. But because our consciousness has been covered over by rust in the form of the material energy, therefore we don't appear to be attracted. But actually, everything we see, everything we taste, everything we experience is actually an expansion of Krishna's energy. So therefore it has a little bit of Krishna's attractiveness. But when we become purified by the process, then the actual whole, who has all beauty, all knowledge, all fame, all strength, all wisdom, everything that we're attracted to, becomes available to us, and then we fall naturally in love with Krishna. Everyone falls in love with Krishna because Krishna is the nicest person. He's unlimitedly nice. He's unlimitedly sweet. Even Krishna likes himself, just like we like ourselves. At the time of devastation, when there's nothing to do, and Krishna is only, the whole universe is covered by water, and Krishna has nothing to do. Then he takes his big toe and he puts it in his mouth, because he heard from his devotees that his lotus feet are very sweet, and he wants to taste it, see how sweet they are. So even Krishna is attracted to himself. He's so attractive. One day when he was in Dwarka, he looked in the, he saw the reflection on the marble. He saw the reflection of himself, and he fell in love with himself. He said, "Who is this person? He's so attractive. I'd like to embrace him like Radharani." Of course, we feel the same thing. We're in love with ourselves too. The difference is that we're a little particle of Krishna. So when we become conscious of Krishna, then we'll see ourselves in Krishna too. And then whatever we love about ourselves, we'll love about Krishna too, because we're also included in Krishna. But there's so much more in Krishna than in our little selves. So whatever we like about ourselves, we'll also like about Krishna. And as I said, to conclude the lecture, this is the Prabhupada Marathon, so we should, if possible, we should participate in any way we can, helping the devotees distribute these books, or you're distributing the books, and get some books, distribute them, read them, come out on Harinam, distribute some prasadam, do something to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then these books will become alive to us. They'll become part of our existence. Krishna will reveal the books within our heart, what they're talking about, and then the whole world will become the Bhagavad Gita or even the Krishna book, and our lives will become successful. So thank you. I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? By the way, I don't make any profit from the books either, so. There's non-profit. But there is a profit because we get Krishna, and that's the greatest profit. Yes.
Thank you for an inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask about books, and you were mentioning about that we should read with attention, that we should read attentively. I would just like to ask for some advice as how to read in order to really imbibe as much as possible. If some advice could be given.
Well, we can only hear so much now in our conditioned state. We can only read so much with attention. But first thing to do is whatever we can understand, we should follow. We should put into practice. And then when Krishna sees at least that much we're trying, then he'll reveal to us eventually what the theory was. It'll become part of our experience. And when we get some experience, then we'll become enthusiastic to dive deeper, because the experience of its, it will be of a higher nature, and that will encourage us to get deeper into it, because Krishna consciousness is like a bowl of sugar. Wherever you go, get into the bowl, it's sweet. So as we dive deeper into Krishna consciousness, it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. So that encourages us to hear more, so we can apply more, and so that things will even get sweeter in the future. So the first thing to do is hear, and we want to find out if we heard anything. We should read something, close the book, and see if we can remember it. Now, at least we should remember which book we read. So that's encouraging. And then maybe we should see, even if we can't remember anything, then open the book again and see if we can remember the first letter or the first word that we read. So if we can do that, then we've made progress. Our memory is probably tripled. And then remember the first word, the first couple of words, and then remember a whole sentence, and then see how to apply that within our lives. And then during the day, see if we remember what we read, and see how to apply it, and we have the opportunity to then apply it. And then Krishna, when he sees that we're making some effort, then he'll increase our memory. It'll increase our realization, so it'll become alive. It'll become part of our existence. It won't be just words, it'll be experience. Thank you for the question. Anything else? All right. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.